Elizabeth Elliot says that restlessness makes us cynical. We need certainty, surety, security, and that can only be found in God Himself because He's the one that's in charge of everything. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. As you think about God's unchanging principles for your life, here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, again talking about John and Betty Stamm. We had gotten John and Betty Stamm finally together in Shanghai after a long and difficult period of waiting on God's will. And finally, at last, they were able to get together in Sinan. Betty had been home a month or more after an absence of 10 years, and John had had some quiet days with her before the bridesmaids and best man arrived. These were fellow workers from the China Inland Mission, and the maid of honor was an old schoolmate of hers, a roommate and chief friend from college days. Her mother wrote, "When the morning of October 25th dawned, we were all filled with thankfulness that God had so wonderfully answered our prayers about the weather." This is 1933. "It was a perfect day, not a cloud in the sky all day long, also without wind or dust, and warmer than it had been for several days past. We could go ahead with our plans for converting our tennis court east of the house into an open-air chapel. The court lends itself easily to a delightful transformation. On three sides, it's lined with trees and shrubbery. On the fourth, the south wall is a solid mass of ivy, the leaves of which were just turning red and gold. From the seats facing south, guests could see over the wall the top of the range of hills near the city. Long benches with backs brought over from the compound church were ranged to leave a wide aisle down the center and an open space at the south end for the ceremony. This was banked in with palms and ferns and flowering plants. Rugs covered the cement floor there and down the central aisle. The bridegroom and best man with the officiating clergyman, our next-door neighbor, the Reverend Reuben A. Torrey," and here is a parenthesis that I can't resist putting in, "he was the brother of one of my professors at Wheaton College when I was a student there in the 1940s. She was Miss Edith Torrey. The bridegroom and best man approached by a path through the garden from the west side. The bridesmaids were wearing lavender silk, had bouquets of yellow chrysanthemums, etc., etc. The bride on the arm of her father wore a simple gown of white silk crepe. We all thought she looked specially lovely as she moved with ease and grace in our midst. On her lips was a sweet, happy smile, while she kept her eyes steadily on the face of the bridegroom. And he, waiting at the altar, had eyes for her alone. We have witnessed many Chinese weddings, even among Christians, when the bride never once glanced up into the face of the bridegroom, keeping her head bowed as if in sorrow and trepidation, and could not but feel that the willing, trustful attitude in this case made a deep impression on our Chinese friends, especially the students. Mr. Torrey, in his ministerial robes, added dignity to the simple, impressive service. Everyone seemed to feel a reverence and sacred joy in witnessing the union of two such devoted, consecrated young lives. A perfect day came to a close when, after the bridal party had dined together and had evening worship with beautiful hymns, John and Betty left for Tsingtao, the home of her childhood. John wrote just a few days later, "This letter is from your newly married couple at Tsingtao. Oh, the Lord has been so good in all the arrangements that we are just praising Him all along the way. We're having a most blessed time together, and there is so much to tell you that I'm going to see if I cannot lay violent hands on some typewriter around here before our blessings pile up so high that I may forget some of them. Just to show you how wondrously happy the Lord has made us, I must tell you of a remark Betty made yesterday. We were speaking of one poor fellow all alone here in China, and she exclaimed so naturally, "John, dear, don't you wish all our single friends would get married?" "I'm sure none of the boys," referring to his brothers, "has had so lovely a honeymoon as Betty and I are having. Perfect fall weather with gorgeous foliage, and this seaside mountain place seemingly all to ourselves. All around are great rocky peaks. The next morning, Betty and I walked up one valley toward a waterfall. It was lovely, with clear crystal pools and rocks on all sides. We never saw a single European all the way, only a couple of Chinese. It was so deserted that we could sing and yodel freely as we went along. Truly, our God seems to go out of his way to make his children happy." But married life like theirs has a way of getting better and better all along. They may have felt that nothing could ever be quite so perfect as those 2 weeks at Tsingtao, but when they got back to Swancheng and settled down in their own little home for a winter of work and study, it was even more wonderful. And I hope that if there are some Chinese listening to me, you're not laughing too hard at my helpless pronunciation of these Chinese names. "John is out for the weekend," Betty wrote early in December, "and next weekend he and I are planning to visit another outstation, where he is to lead his first communion service in Chinese. That will be my first trip in this part of the country. We've had the tailor and his men busy for some days, and both of us are now fixed up with Chinese garments. You ought to see John in his fur-lined gown. He looks taller than ever, and watch him gather his arms up under the skirts in the back when he is going downstairs, for all the world like an old Chinese gentleman." And I have to read another one of those lovely poems that Betty wrote. "Dearest, when thou desirest to buy a ring, sweetheart, in this obey me without fail. Give me no diamond, which is for sale. It is too glittering, too cold a thing. Buy me no platinum. I cannot sing of such a metal, precious, but too pale. And bandits robbing soon would end the tale. Thy love is more than ransom for a king. It is enough that I should have thy heart. And when thou takest me, lover, for thy bride, give me a ring of gold, not thick nor wide, pure gold like thee, God's finest work of art. I also thought, into the heavens new, where streets are gold, I might take thy ring, too." Well, for any who have not been able to hear the first part of this story, I just want to tell you a little bit about why it means so much to me. The Stams were very close friends of my parents. One of the brothers of John Stam was the director of the Department of Music at Wheaton College. His name was Peter, and his daughter, Ruth Stam Jordan, is a very close friend of mine. But I do remember when Betty Scott visited in our home when I was only about 4 years old. She was on her way to China. And I came across the prayer of consecration that she had written when she was just a young woman. And I copied that prayer into my Bible, a prayer of complete surrender of herself to God. She was also greatly blessed by attending conferences in Keswick, New Jersey, and I was also blessed there. My life was deeply influenced by some of the missionary speakers that I heard there. And before they got married, John had written to his father, "Betty knows that in all fairness and love to her, I cannot ask her to enter into an engagement with years to wait." You see, John was behind her at Moody Bible Institute. He still had another year before he could be accepted by the mission. But he said, "We have a real understanding, keeping the interests of the Lord's work always first. The China Inland Mission has appealed for men, single men, to itinerate in sections where it would be almost impossible to take a woman until more settled work has been commenced. Some time ago, I promised the Lord that if fitted for this forward movement, I would gladly go into it. So now I cannot back down without sufficient reason, merely upon personal considerations. If, after we are out a year or two, We find that the Lord's work would be advanced by our marriage. We need not wait longer. From the way I have written, you and mother might think I was talking about a cartload of lumber instead of something that has dug down very deep into our hearts. Betty and I have prayed much about this, and I'm sure that if our sacrifice is unnecessary, the Lord will not let us miss out on any of His blessings. Our hearts are set to do His will. But this is true, isn't it? Our wishes must not come first. The progress of the Lord's work is the chief consideration. So there are times when we just have to stop and think hard. God honored the consecration of these two young people. And if there are some young people listening to me now whose future seems very confused, or perhaps even just totally unknown or very dim, and you're wondering what to do with your life, as a former missionary myself, I want to testify that I wouldn't give anything for the 11 years that the Lord gave me as a foreign missionary. I can testify to the absolute faithfulness of God, even though I look upon myself as a very poor, inadequate, and inept missionary. God taught me a good many things when I lived in the jungle of Ecuador. I trust that even in ways that I don't know about, He may have taught some of the Indians something through me. But I don't have any shining stories to tell about that. But I do want to commend to you Jesus Christ, His faithfulness as a master, His absolute trustworthiness as Lord. Give Him your life. Give Him your all. You'll never be sorry.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.